Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Maria Garcia. Ever hear the expression, slow as molasses in January? It most likely comes from a remarkable and deadly disaster, which took place right here in Boston exactly 100 years ago today. The Great Boston Molasses Flood of 1919. On a cold January day 100 years ago, a massive tank of the sticky sweet goo exploded in Boston's North End, unleashing a tsunami of molasses onto the streets. The wave trapped and killed 21 people, injuring hundreds more. And the aftermath of the disaster eventually led to important changes to how we construct and inspect buildings in America. Joining us now for more on the 1919 flood is Robert Allison. He's a professor of history at Suffolk University and the author of a number of books, including The American Revolution and A Short History of Boston. Professor Allison, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thanks, Maria. Great to be here.
So, Professor, let's back up from the explosion a bit, which really has become part of the lore of Boston. But set the scene for us. The North End on the harbor, a 50-foot high steel tank holding more than a million gallons of molasses. Why was the tank there?
The tank was there for the Purity Distilling Company to pipe the molasses over to Cambridge, where it had a processing plant. And, of course, the tank is on the waterfront, so the molasses could be unloaded directly from a ship. And it's on the edge of this very densely populated neighborhood, this time mainly Italian-American and Jewish, a very crowded neighborhood. The tank is there because it gives access to the harbor. And the ship, the tank had only been built about 3 or 4 years earlier, been put up kind of hurriedly just before the war because this particular molasses was being used to make munitions, piped over to their plant in Cambridge to turn it into ethanol, which is an ingredient in all kinds of things. And in this case, they were making explosives with it.
So molasses, it was a controversial liquid, to say the least, you know, with historical connections to the Atlantic slave trade.
Yeah, sure, it was controversial, although it's really a necessary thing for lots of different purposes, rum, sugar, candy, et cetera. And there's also a bigger plant in Brooklyn. You know, molasses goes a long way toward making Boston what it is, because Boston was really a center for the production of sugar. In fact, we have the first candy factory in the country in the 1760s, and it is the trade with the West Indies, sending codfish to the West Indies and bringing back molasses to turn into rum, that really makes the 18th century economy of New England work.
So what was Boston like in 1919, and what was the North End like?
Boston was a very crowded place. It was still an industrial city. The great industries in Boston, really along the waterfront of the North End, Charlestown, South Boston, iron manufacturing, and so on, although Boston was in an economic decline for most of the 20th century. The things that kept Boston going were the two world wars. But other than that, the industries are moving out. They're upsizing, moving to places where they can build bigger plants, use electricity, and do other things. So Boston was a blue-collar city for most of the 20th century, and the North End is very much a blue-collar neighborhood. The Italians in the North End are either working in these small industries or they're fishermen. And this, it's a poor neighborhood. And one of the reasons you can put a molasses tank there is because these people aren't going to complain too much. I should also say that across the street, there was a plant that processed coal into gas, and Boston was lit with gas. We hadn't yet made the transition to electricity. So the old-timers in the North End still refer to the little park behind the parking garage as the gassy, because that's where the gas tank was. And so there was some concern as to having a gas tank in the middle of the North End. And in fact, the state reps from the North End were pushing to have the gas tank inspected, but the gas company said, well, the gas tanks aren't a problem at all. We've never seen one explode. And so there was, on the one hand, a natural fear of having a big tank of something that could explode right there in the North End. And on the other hand, the gas company dismissing these fears. And in fact, the state reps from the North End had pushed to have a hearing on whether there should be these gas tanks in these densely populated neighborhoods. And it was scheduled for the afternoon of January the 15th. Now, their argument that gas tanks are potentially dangerous gained a great deal of credence when a tank filled with molasses explodes, because who thought molasses could explode and kill 21 people?
Yeah. So I understand that this molasses tank was built there in 1915 by the Purity Distilling Company. And from our research, you know, we learned that it was built with a very quick deadline.
Very quickly,
so why
yes.
did they build it so quickly, and why was it of such poor construction?
Well, they were in a hurry to get it done. And when you're in a hurry to get things done, you're going to cut corners. So the steel is a lot thinner than it should have been. And they never tested it to see if it could hold anything. Usually you build a tank, you fill it with water to see if it leaks. They never did that. They were in a hurry to get this done in 1915 so that they could start processing for the plant over in Cambridge. And so they get it done quickly, and it starts to leak. And people in the neighborhood see this brown ooze coming out of the rivets, and they say, look, the tank is leaking. And so the company simply paints the tank brown. So they won't complain because they can't see that it's leaking anymore. And there was actually a foreman who kept calling the company saying, you know, you really should do something about the tank. But the company, they thought he was kind of a tiresome nuisance. And the, you know, people in the neighborhood would go and scoop up the molasses from under the tank and take it home and use it to cook. They knew this was a source of molasses. So you have this leaky tank built because they could. And it was also in a time when Boston's, shall we say, the city inspectors were more less conscious of the structure than of what you might give them if they look the other way. So there are a lot of corners cut for a variety of reasons. The company was in a hurry to get this thing up and so didn't want to spend the time making a good tank. And the city went along with this.
So let's go to that day. 100 years ago today, some reports have a wave of molasses flowing down Commercial Street at 35 miles an hour. 21 people killed. I mean, the sheer force of this is so hard to imagine.
It's really hard to imagine. And they describe the sound like machine gun fire as the rivets pop off of this tank. And it's at noon. A day or two earlier, a tanker from Havana had come, and the molasses on the ship is kept warm so that it can flow. There was already molasses in the tank, and during this cold winter days, it had pretty much frozen. And the thinking is that it was this warmer molasses that reacts with the cold molasses in the bottom of the tank, and it all expands, and that's what causes this. Just at about noon on January the 15th. So there are people eating lunch. There are a couple of kids in the area on their way home from school, and this thing explodes. And it not only has the molasses flowing, but it's pushing these steel plates in front of it. And there is an elevated trolley line along Commercial Street, and the plates hit that trolley track and knock it down. There's a trolley operator coming along the track from North Station is able to stop in time. There's a buildings across the street that are hit with this wave of molasses. It's now about 20 feet high. And it goes, you know, remember, it goes in a circle. The molasses doesn't just say we're going to go in this direction. It goes in all directions. So there's a firehouse for the fireboats on the harbor. That one is hit, and it's really knocked off of its foundation. And if one of the firefighter inside is crushed. He actually lives for most of the afternoon as the other guys are trying to rescue him before he succumbs. George Leahy, who's a firefighter, and there are a couple of kids, Pasquale and Tosco and Maria D'Estacio, are on their way home from school. Maria D'Estacio is with her brothers and sisters, and their brother is knocked under the molasses. They're able to pull him out. It's a very sticky substance, and you would look at this, you know, wave of molasses, and only if you could see some evidence of someone struggling would you know there was anyone in it. It just covers everything, and 21 people are killed, but we don't know how many horses are stuck in the molasses, and they have to be shot, and so we try to pull the animals out of this. It's really a catastrophe we haven't seen since, fortunately.
Right. Well, when I picture molasses, I picture this sort of dense, gooey, slow-moving liquid. How could it kill people? Like, what is the science behind how it sort of created these perfect conditions, essentially, to be so, so deadly?
Well, as you said, it's a 20-foot wall of molasses or wave of molasses, and you get hit with a 20-foot wave of anything, you're going to be knocked down. And then you're knocked down in this really thick, gooey stuff, and you can't get out. It's like quicksand. The more you struggle, the deeper you're going to go. And so, yeah, if you're standing up and are able to keep standing while the molasses runs over your feet, you'll probably be able to make your way out. But if it knocks you down, you're going to drown. So these people are drowned in the molasses.
Oh, my God. So what was the emergency response like?
The emergency response was actually very good. And it probably because we had just been through this war. And so there were a lot of people who had training in how you handle a crisis. So they did set up a health station in Haymarket Square. And so you could set up a medical facility there. Of course, the problem is everyone you were bringing is tracking the molasses with them. So this substance follows you. So getting the people there for triage is the first step. And shutting off the area and then trying to get the molasses into the harbor. One thing that's going to happen is the temperature starts to drop. And with that, the molasses hardens. So it's like concrete. And that's really a huge challenge. They have medical personnel who go to Haymarket to help with triage there. And here the fire department has both a boat, a fire boat, and also an apparatus that you can actually see on Congress Street at the Fire Museum. Mm-hmm. It's a pumper they use to pump salt water onto the molasses to cut it and push it into the harbor. But also, you know, men with shovels. This is still a blue-collar city where you have a lot of guys who work with shovels and just trying to dig it out and push it into the harbor and clean it up in that way. It takes a long time. The EPA probably would not approve of pushing the molasses into the harbor, but I don't know what else you could have done with the molasses at that point.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of the conditions of Boston at the time, there was this tide of anarchy. And just a few years later, Sacco and Vanzetti were convicted and executed here in Boston. Could the explosion and flood have been caused by anarchists?
The company tried to argue that it was. And the anarchists are sending bombs to people. And this is one of their modes of destabilizing the capitalist system, was sending bombs to people who are part of the system, including Oliver Wendell Holmes and newspaper publishers and others. And there were anarchists in the North End. Sacco and Vanzetti both had ties to the North End. So the company tried to argue this is a bomb. The company's trying to dodge responsibility. Doubtful, very doubtful that anarchists were involved in this. Not to say there weren't anarchists around. And of course, the company's producing munitions. And one thing the anarchists are upset about is the United States is at war in Russia at the moment. And so they're trying to end the military-industrial complex. But it's really not plausible. The company is trying to dodge responsibility by saying that the anarchists did this.
Okay. Well, Robert Allison is a professor of history at Suffolk University. He's the author of a number of books, including The American Revolution and A Short History of Boston. Professor Allison, thanks so much.
Thank you, Maria.
That's our show for today. Radio Boston is a production of 90.9 WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. I'm Maria Garcia. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.